Trying? Mm-hmm. We're on? Mm-hmm. Okay. If we're on, we're on. The third reading of Parshas Kisisa returns to the events of Erev HaShchodesh Elul, before Moshe Rabbeinu is going to, so to speak, go back up the mountain to receive the second Luchos. So here, a conversation ensues between God and Moshe Rabbeinu, in which Moses seeks to obtain God's pardon and receive God's favor on behalf of the Jewish people. And also, he also asks for things himself, as we're going to see as the reading continues. Shlishi begins in chapter 33, verse 12, Vayemer Moshe el Hashem. Moshe says to God, Re'ei, now see here, Ata Omer Eli, you're saying to me, Hal es ha'om azeh, raise up this nation. Va'ata lo'i hoida'itani es asher tishlachimi, but you didn't tell me who you're sending with me. And at the same time, Ba'ata Marta, you said, Yedaiticha v'shem, I will be known by name, so to speak, or singled out from amongst others. V'gam atzasi chem be'inoy, you said that I found favor in your eyes. So if I found favor in your eyes, and if you singled me out, why wouldn't you tell me how this is going to work? What exactly is Moshe Rabbeinu saying here? Okay, so let's go to Rashi. And there are numerous interpretations here. The first and obvious question is, Moshe says to God, now see here, see. God has to see. He'll put on his glasses, turn the lights on. What does that mean, to God, see? Re'ei ata oimer elai. So Rashi says that the language, the verbiage, re'ei, see, which is used here, is a euphemism. It doesn't mean something which is physically seen with one's eye. And what was Moshe Rabbeinu alluding to? What was the euphemism? So he says, what Moshe Rabbeinu said to God in this opening part of the conversation is, Ten einecha v'libcha el dvarecha. I'll translate that literally. We'll see what that means. Put your eyes and your heart towards your words. Ata yimere lai, you said to me, raise up this nation. But v'ata lo hedetani, you didn't tell me who you're going to send along to help me. In other words, how could you command me to take up the nation? How could you give me a job like this? And at the same time, you don't tell me who will be my assistant. And he's talking here about an angelic helper, because God said I'm going to send an angel. Moshe said, well, I still know who the angel is. I don't know who's going to help me. You can't send me to fly blind. I need to know, how I'm doing this. Who's helping me? Asher amartoli, you said to me earlier, Hine anoichi shaleach malach. You, God, said, I am going to send an angel before you, and he's going to bring you to that place that I have prepared. And now such conversation changes here. Then Moshe says, oh, and by the way, Ein zoi hoida, this is not the kind of knowledge or awareness that I'm looking for. Because after all, you said to me that, like, we're going to have a special relationship. She'ein ani chafetz ba. So the conversation seems to be forked. It goes like in two directions. On one hand, you didn't tell me who you're sending along. So I need to know who I'm going to the table with, so to speak. Who's going to help me? But then again, I don't even want to meet this angel anyway. I'm not interested in this angel. What do I want? I want you. God said, I want you to come. I don't want any angels. I don't want any helpers. I want God himself. And what's the end of the argument? Or what's the end of the case? Moshe makes his case. Vata marti yedaticha b'shem. So this is what Moshe said to God. You said, hikarticha mishar b'nei adam, that I would be recognizable, so to speak. I would be distinct, separate. Like when you look at somebody or something, and this is clearly in a class of its own. You said that I was going to be different from others. B'shem chashivus. This was in the name of prominence. And it would be widely known that Moshe Rabbeinu's relationship with God is different than all of the prophets and different than everybody else. Share amartali, you said, Hini anechi ba'elecha ba'avon, and you said, I'm going to come to you in the thick, acrid part of the cloud. V'gam b'choy aminu leilam. So you said the people are going to see me differently. I will have this unique relationship with you. I will speak to you in a unique way, different than everybody else. That's what you said. And you said they'll believe what I say for posterity, because they would see how I had been singled out. So it's kind of like, so if I've been singled out, and if you gave me all this special attention, and if you made all these promises to me, well, in that case, may I say, I'm not looking for the angel. in that case, and one God himself. What is Moshe asking for? So, and how does that work with the language? The A ata imer C. Now you say. So, of course, the biggest problem here is the A, the business of C. And Rashi's methodology of reconciliation is very hard to understand. He said, "What is the meaning of the A? What is the meaning of C? C means ten einecha v'libcha, einecha v'libcha. Put your eyes and your heart." So it's like the A, C, is anthropomorphical. God should see. He doesn't see before, and he should see after. So how does Rashi reconcile the anthropomorphism of C? By adding anthropomorphism. Now he gave God eyes and a heart. How does that help? Who is winning wiser as a result of this? So like the Ibn Ezra says it, he says, what does he mean the A? He says, look at this pickle I'm in. Look at this tzara that I'm in. You gave me a job. I'm stuck here with this people. I don't even know how I'm getting out of this. I don't know who's going to help me. And you're just like, go for it. Figure it out.
It's
Moshe's emunah. It's not a question of emunah. Moshe said, how am I doing this? Just tell me how I'm doing it. I don't want to fly blind. You know, like they have in the GPS today. You could either just follow what the GPS says, or what a lot of people like to do, including me, is you hit the top and it tells you where you're going at least. I don't have an idea of where I'm going. It's like, last second I'll make a turn, you know, like a turn now. Why don't you tell me that 5 seconds ago? You're like, at least I have like an idea of where I'm going, like I'm not flying blind. I know the city. I know more or less anywhere I'm going. Okay, some street says new to me. Yes, Waze is taking me in ways I've never seen before. Okay, but give me an idea of where I'm going. Which is like, figure this out for me. Like, you said there's going to be an angel going with me. What's the angel's name? How does this angel work? How's our arrangement going to be? I mean, Moshe's asking for, give me a job, just give me the parameters. So Ben Ezra says, like, I'm in trouble here. So I'm really in a pickle. You put me in a pickle here, God. Come on, like, figure this out, help me figure it out. The Sefarno says, what Moshe Rabbeinu is asking is for divine providence. Divine involvement, divine engagement. He says, do not hide your face from me. Now, this is a very interesting idea because there's this notion called Hester Panim, where God hides his face from us. In fact, that's the theme of Purim that we're going into, where God hides his face from us. And that's where we have expressions like, Udo Lamatishan Hashem, why are you sleeping, God? God, re-engage with us. Don't turn your eyes away from us. Don't make believe you don't care. Show that you're involved. So Moshe Rabbeinu is saying that A, it's like C, I know you see everything, God, but could you actually show me how you're seeing? Like we say, Vayikatz ki yashan Hashem. God was sleeping and he woke up. God was sleeping. Does God sleep? Is God ever uninvolved? It's a euphemism. Obviously, it doesn't have to be taken literally. It describes an exilic reality and how we're, so to speak, asking Hashem not to be with us through the veil of exile, but rather that he should be with us in a straightforward manner. So that's the idea of re'eh. Re'eh means see. It's almost like, let me see, not you see. He's saying, now see here, but really, according to Sephardim, he's saying, now let me see what's going on here. Which isn't so different from what the other Mepharshim say. The question, of course, is, why did Rashi follow the strange verbiage of Einecha v'libcha el dvarecha? What was accomplished with it? Now, we went further, v'ata lo yedatani esa shetishlach. He didn't tell me who you're going to send along with me. So Rashi said, you didn't tell me. Is this angel you're going to send? What's his name? How's he going to function? Ramban says, even more clearly, he says, you did not tell me who this angel is. And is this the angel that says, Shmi Bikirbay, that my name is amongst him, which is the angel of Matatran? Is this the angel who also has no patience? Because you said, if I go with him, then that's it. Like, there's no room for error. Like, if I go with him, it has to be, everything's going to be right. Say, well, is that the angel? You're sending the same angel who's also so exacting, so demanding? Or are we going to have like a different angelic force that's kind of a little more easygoing? Rabbeinu Miyucha says, I need to know who I'm relying on. Who am I relying on? What kind of help am I getting along in this? The Daz Zakenim, the Baal HaTesfos, says something really interesting. He says, nobody in the world doesn't have an angel with them. Everybody has an angel. Nobody's alone. Everybody's got a divine force. Everybody's got a malach. You're human. You're part of this, the reality of this world. You got a malach. He says, so what did you give me? Everybody has a malach. So now you tell me I have a malach. I know I have a malach. Everybody has a malach. Thanks a lot. That don't do much for me. You see your malach? You talk to your malach, he helps you? No. Okay. So we feel like we're in this alone anyway. Sure, God's always protecting us, and he's always sending angels to watch us, and so on and so forth. But Baal HaTesva said, Moshe said, at the end of the day, nothing's really changed. That you haven't told me how we're unique. You haven't told me how this journey is going to be different or special because we have a malach. But the Sephorna says, I know we have malachim when we go to the land of Israel. Which this goes back to the story of Yaakov, that the angels were going up and the angels were going down. Right? So the obvious question is, why are the angels going up? Where do angels naturally live? Or what's their natural habitat? It's up. So angels should come down. Why are they going up? So Rashi explains, because the angels of Eretz Yisrael were going up, and the angels of Chutz La'aretz, of outside of Eretz Yisrael, were coming down. So it's not the same. Living in Israel is one level of consciousness, one level of closeness to Hashem. Living outside of Israel, it's a different level, different kind of angel. So Sepharno says, Moshe Rabbeinu said, I know when we get to Israel, there's an angel. You said it's going to be the angel in Israel, and when we conquer the land, there'll be an angel doing battle for us. How about till we get there? Moshe Rabbeinu senses it's going to be a bit of a journey, and of course there is. And Moshe Rabbeinu never even gets there, it's just so. This is like, how are we getting to that point? I understand you give me directions once we get there, you give me help, but I got to get there first. The Abarbanel, quoting the Rambam, says, I know that you said these people are stiff-necked. I know we're going to have problems. And of course they did. So he said, maybe you tell me how the angel reacts, so I know to begin with what to anticipate. I know there's going to be problems. So really, any way you slice it, basically what the Mefarshim are saying, Moshe Rabbeinu started off as saying, I'm not satisfied with status quo. I want something different than what I've been promised. So what did he want? What exactly did he want? And I think we're going to have the answer to the question of what exactly he wanted when we understand the words that Rashi uses. The directions of the Biurim book. Here in the Biurim, the Rebbe notes something quite remarkable. The expression that's used, very specific, very pointed expression is, ten ein chav libecha, put your heart and your eyes. And then he goes in back into, you know, something similar to the Mefarshim. You said it's going to be an angel. What's the angel's name? How's the angel going to function? Rashi quote those words in the beginning. Here, in this very pithy teaching, the Rebbe sets out to explain Biur HaSignin, to explain syntax, HaChorik, which is very unusual, an unusual syntax, unusual expression, which, as I said, doesn't seem to answer any questions, doesn't add much explanation. He says, ten eincha. It says re'ei, it says see. So Rashi says, right, see. Ten eincha v'libecha. Put your eyes and your heart. So not only has he not answered anthropomorphism, or the problem of us seeing or speaking about God using human terminology, re'ei, not only has he not answered that, in fact, now he's exacerbated the problem. Why? Because he added a heart. Not only eyes, you have a heart too. What did he accomplish? So the Rebbe suggests, Rebbe suggests that Kavanas Rashi, the intention of Rashi here, which is not, he is not quoting our sages here. The intention of Rashi is, Lirmeis Bekach, he alludes to Havtachosei Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Nigeya LeBeis HaMikdash. Moshe Rabbeinu is alluding to a future promise that God will make with regard to the temple, the first Beis HaMikdash. That God says to Shlomo HaMelech, and this is found in the Book of Kings, V'hoyu eini v'libi sham kol hayomim. God promises King Solomon, you built the Beis HaMikdash, you built the temple atop Mount Moriah, I will, my eyes and my heart will be there all of the days. So what did God mean when he said to King Solomon, his eyes and heart will be there kol hayomim? What did he mean? In other words, that God's presence in its full glory, whatever that means, Yishkein bebeis hamigdash tamid, will always dwell or reside in the Beis HaMikdash. That means the Beis HaMikdash will always be a place in which God's presence is manifest. And it was during the first Beis HaMikdash, God's presence was manifest. People felt and knew God when they came to the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, the Beis HaMikdash did not function as a repository of the presence of the Creator if the Jewish people behaved nicely. The Beis HaMikdash did not reflect Hashem's presence if we were deserving. When did the Beis HaMikdash reflect God's presence? When did it reflect God's presence? Always. The answer is always. That's the nature of Beis HaMikdash. If it's a Beis HaMikdash, God's presence is always going to be there. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu asked for. He says, don't give us a Beis HaMikdash in which, if you behave well, and you do, and we do what we're supposed to do, then God's presence will be amongst us. Well, if we don't behave, well, we didn't behave. What do you want from me? You didn't do what I asked you to do. But the prayer is, Eini V'Libi. The promise that God made and the prayer that we offered was that his eyes and heart should be there even at a time when the Jewish people would not behave appropriately. In other words, it is exactly and precisely this haftacha, this promise, which gives strength to Moshe Rabbeinu's request at this point. Moshe Rabbeinu, it's haftacha zu, which is mahava chizuk l'drishas shel Moshe kan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chveidi v'atzmei yitztaref l'bnei Yisrael b'masam. What does Moshe Rabbeinu really want? Where is he going with this? He didn't tell me the name of the angel. He doesn't want the name of the angel. How does the pasuk finish? V'gam ha'yedeticha b'shem. You may be known by name. You don't want to send an angel with me. He says, first of all, the old arrangements are not even solidified. But truth be told, I don't want the old arrangements. I don't want the promised arrangements. What I want? Moshe wants exclusivity. I want God to be with the Jewish people, he says. And in other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chveidi v'atzmai, that God himself should join the Jewish people of Masom in their journeys. V'le yistapek, it should not be sufficient b'shlichos malach b'vad. He shouldn't get away with only sending an angel, which God said to Moshe, I can't be with these people. They vex me. They anger me. They incite me. There's no room for error, no margin for sin. So you know what? I'm going to send an angel. I'm not going to be with them. My presence will not be manifest, but there'll be a divine angel. There'll be a divine force that will guard them, protect them, enable them, bring them where they have to go. My presence can't dwell amongst them. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no. That's not going to work. If we are to be a Jewish people, that means that God's presence has to be amongst us. When? Always. Always. He says the Mishkan, the Migdash, is not just a building, like we learned in the outset. That it's v'shachanti b'seichem, I'll dwell amongst them, says God, means b'seich kol echad v'echad, amongst each and every one. The request that Moshe Rabbeinu made then, before the Jewish people sinned again. It's like, we know things are going to go wrong. God said things are going to go wrong. He says, I know this is a stiff-necked nation, stubborn people. I know that they are not going to follow the straight and narrow. That's why I'm sending an angel. Moshe says, exactly why I'm asking for your presence. Precisely because you say that they won't always do the right thing, that's precisely why I want Hashem's presence guaranteed. We can't be a Jewish people only if and when we behave appropriately. We need to be a Jewish people that has Hashem's presence amongst us always, at every time. Rebbe adds in the footnote something phenomenal here. He says, the diuk, the precise analysis, the words, because Rashi adds a word, he says, dvorecha. The words, eini v'libi, my eyes and heart, are lifted from the Book of Kings. But over there it says, Eini v'libi sham, my eyes and heart will be there, kol hayamim, all the days. So the eyes mean God says I will be supervising at all times. My heart means I'm invested there, not cerebrally, not objectively, but subjectively. Hearts and hearts. But Rashi has words, el dvarecha, to your words. What does this mean? The Rebbe suggests that based upon the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, that it's known shehaolam nivra al yedei diburei shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu kaviyachol, that the world is created by virtue of divine speech. The Mishnah says that ba'asara ma'amores nivra ha'olam, with 10 utterances the world is created. So God uttered words and the world is created. God said, let there be light. Vayomer Elokim yehi oir. God said, let there be light, and vayehi oir. God said, yehi rokiya b'toch ha'moyim, let there be a firmament, let there be an atmosphere amongst the water. What happened? Vayehi chen, and it was so. So God said or spoke the world into reality. And therefore, that's dvorecha, that's God's words. Davar is a word. Dvorecha, God's words. In other words, what are we asking for? The world that's created through God's words, which if you want to speak about this in the jargon of mysticism, refers to midas ha-malchus, the 10th and the lowest level of the Eser Sefirot, which is called Malchus, which is referred to sometimes as Dibur, as speech. V'habakasha, the question, the request, the prayer, the entreaty then is Eifai Shakadosh Baruch Hu Yishkein, that God should dwell. And we said dwell, God's dwelling, is captured by the terminology Eini V'libi, art, eyes, and heart. Ten Eincha V'libcha, B'teicha Olam Hazeh, in this world, not in the heavenly world, not in Gan Eden or the treasure trove of Neshamas, not in some distant reality. No, right here. Well, here in our world, the whole idea of a Beis HaMikdash is a Didalei Yisbarech, like the Medrash says, a dwelling for God, B'tachtonim, in the lowest common denominator, in the ordinary and mundane reality. So what Moshe Rabbeinu says is that we want God's presence in our world. And God's presence in our world means that God dwells amongst each and every one of us, always, even when we don't deserve it, even when things are inappropriate. That was the prayer that Moses made. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu refused to take anything less, so to speak, than God's exclusivity. Because if we have anything less than God's exclusivity, with what are we then a chosen people? With what are we Hashem's people? Being Hashem's people has to mean that God dwells amongst us always. And even when we forget, the world doesn't forget. And when we forget that we're special, and we forget that we're different, the world reminds us, you're not like us. You are different. They usually don't do it in a very kind way. But ultimately, it is the truth, a truth that's apparent sometimes to everybody but us, a truth that's known. And those who hate God hate Yisrael. It goes synonymously. Why? Because we represent God, or as Hitler, Yimach Shemo, said, the conscience to the entire world. Now you have a little inkling, some understanding of this incredible conversation that unfolded between our greatest teacher and the creator of heaven and earth.
That's very true. Other people won't.